Have you ever been at a place in your life that you wondered if God really cared about you? Have you ever asked that question, either aloud or just in your mind, God, do you really love me? I mean, that's one of the things that they're struggling with.
Welcome back to the Grace Church Members Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Mazingo, and we are here with Bill White and Jim Taylor, and we are previewing our new teaching series that's coming up this week. And hey, guys, it's good to have you here.
Hey, Mo.
Hey, Mo. Good to be here.
And so let's jump right in. Jim, first question is to you. We're going to be studying the book of Malachi. Why?
You know, Malachi is one of those books in the Bible that kind of gets neglected. Nobody really thinks about it. Nobody really looks at it until you're trying to find the New Testament, and, you know, and you're trying to land on Matthew, and then you don't quite turn enough pages, and you're like, oh, what's this thing? And you flip a couple more till you get to the, you know, to the New Testament. So,
you know, that's true. People probably know more about 400 years of silence than they know about Malachi.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I think so. So, you know, and I like all that. I like finding books that are neglected or they're a little bit wooden or we don't quite have the context to really read them and immediately understand what's happening.
Right.
But it is a valuable book. And really, I'll just be real honest about how it came about. Is we spent the greater part of a year, 2023, going through the Gospel of John.
Yes.
And we were in the teaching meeting one week, and Bill White says, I need to do something practical. We've got to teach something practical, like the book of James. And so that's how we got to James. But I was fighting for an Old Testament book.
Right.
Because we like to go back and forth when we can, Old Testament, New Testament. And so Malachi is kind of like the James of the Old Testament. It's short, it's direct, it's a little bit harsh, and there's some very practical lessons in Malachi. And so that, to answer your question, that's how we got there.
Okay.
It's real spiritual and intentional.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the teaching team, what is that? We've heard Bill and Matt mention teaching team. They've even mentioned Jim Taylor's name by mention you by name. What does that look like? What's your role with that team?
Yeah, we meet weekly. And we've got a group of folks who they are just thinking about what we're teaching. We're looking at the passages. You know, we try to stay at least 6 months out when we can. Now, before COVID, I think we were spending time each week talking about sermons that were a month out.
Right.
And then the world changed, and we realized at any moment, you know, the future is uncertain. So now we kind of work week to week, but we spend a few minutes each week offering feedback to the teachers. And then we spend a few minutes talking about the sermon that's coming up that week. And the teacher will often throw out some questions or thoughts to the group. And we try to pull people in who can offer different perspectives.
Right.
Different seasons of life, different genders, and that's really it's pretty informal,
right?
That's kind of what we're doing each
week.
Yeah,
we're really in some ways we're having fellowship around the text. And if you're the teacher that week, you may have a couple of ideas that you're working through that you know are sticky,
right?
And it gives you a safe place to be able to do that and get a variety of perspectives. We'll have some of our student ministry teachers in there at times, and it's also a way for us to have some accountability. And the good part, from my point of view, as someone who is usually on the practitioner side of this, is having the benefit of smart people who really love the scriptures.
Right.
Who are not necessarily carrying the water on the weekly teaching and dealing with some of the existential trauma that's involved in doing that. Who are just at a little bit of a distance and who are thinking about the bigger picture. And so, like, I would not have thought to do the book of Malachi. It's one of Jim's real strengths and contributions is, I mean, Jim is a biblicist, and he loves the Bible. I have a lot of jokes about that, so I'm not going to say, about how much Jim loves the Bible and the way in which he reads the Bible and thinks about the Bible. And
right.
he's bibline. And so he is, and that pushes us to go to some places that we might not go that are real helpful.
Yeah.
And so
you do have a lot of jokes about that.
I do have a lot of jokes about that.
I'm sure they come up.
I'm sorry. And I've thought of some while I'm here that they're not appropriate for the members podcast. So
as a teacher, you're calling the best of these different perspectives, and you get to filter that, and then you get to push it through your own study and your own personality for the weekend. I think it's another way that we get to exercise plurality. It's an important way to get to exercise plurality. So whenever Jim brings up Malachi, Bill, what do you start thinking about?
Well, I start thinking about at first it's daunting. Every time we talk about a new series, almost every time. Now James was not daunting because I felt real strongly about it. But I don't normally have that kind of clarity and feeling. And I felt like James was a grounding, and it builds on John. And
yeah,
so,
well.
But usually it's very daunting for me. So when Jim brought up the idea of Malachi, it felt very daunting to me. So what I had to do is I have to go get in the historical context. That's the way I work my way to it. And so I have to get in the context of who are these people? Who is this person? And so it's difficult because we don't have introduction to Malachi and who he is. Some people even wonder, is that his name or is it just a title? Because it could mean messenger of the Lord. He's a messenger. He's the messenger.
Right.
And but then as I get it narrowed down into a historical context for me, then I can identify with these people.
Right.
And I'm like, here's this messenger who's coming to a group of people after the return from exile and this half-hearted restoration of temple worship and this failed attempt in many ways to reestablish the Davidic line and the kingdom. So you have this thing that hadn't really worked out real well, and they're a shadow of what they once were. And they've kind of settled. And so they're not real involved in idolatry, but they're marrying women who are involved in idolatry. They're divorcing women. They're not obeying a kingdom ethic. Their worship is half-hearted and corrupt, and they feel entitled, you know? And so, like, once I got to that, I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm ready to go. Because you have a group of people who are religious, and so they profess faith, and a lot of them are sincere in that, but they're half hearted in their execution of it, and they feel entitled. They feel like we're doing everything God wants us to do, and you don't really love us. You're not really, you're not really working on our behalf. And then I'm like, okay, entitled people who are half-heartedly obeying, like, that starts getting convicting for me.
So let's drill down a little bit, just to not have any assumptions here on the context. You've got folks coming back from exile. How long ago? It's been long enough, right?
Coming back about 500 years before Jesus.
Okay.
And if you go back to when we covered some of these books, and Nehemiah and Ezra, we talked about some of this. Is that those people, the older men and women who remembered the Solomonic temple, when they see the new temple, they weep.
Yeah, sad.
They like
sad.
Pull out their beards here. They're look at what we've become and how far we've fallen because of our idolatry, you know.
And they've been in the land long enough to pick up the pieces and have a better effort at worship, right?
Yeah, they have. No, they've been there. They've got a functioning priesthood.
Yep.
People are making sacrifices on the regular, following the schedule.
But there's no king.
There's no king. There's, Zerubbabel was the hope. That's failed. And they're still under a governor. They are, so the situation is still very similar to what you're going to find when Jesus comes. It's different because they're not under Rome.
Right.
But they have foreign pagan authority that is still over them, but they have permission to kind of do their thing. A bunch of the people, the sad part is that most of the wealth, the Jewish folks who are really wealthy, they're back in Persia, they're in Babylon. And they're ensconced there, and they're at the power center, and they're still practicing some form of Judaism. You still have that. You have Iranian Jews today who are wealthy. And they prospered there, and they stayed there. And then people who've gone back, It's just not, it's just tough. It's like developing world.
Well, you know? And you're probably, they were probably expecting, you know, when they realized they were going to be in exile 70 years.
Right.
And God made a promise to bring them back. And they come back and they start doing all this work to rebuild the walls and rebuild the temple and rebuild the city. They were probably expectant of, okay, God humbled us.
It's all gonna come
back together. Yeah. Now we're going to be back on top. Now Messiah is going to come. We're going to throw off the nations. We're going to be at the top.
Right.
And it just did not turn out that way.
Yeah. So you mentioned temple, you mentioned wall. So Ezra, Nehemiah, how does that fit, those two books fit in this time frame for Malachi?
Malachi is probably, we think, about 100 years after.
Could be. You have a window. It could be a little sooner than mm-hmm. that. But you're still, you know, right at somewhere right around 500 years, maybe 400 and change before the birth of Christ,
right.
Somewhere in that arena. It's hard to pin it down because you don't have any cues from the book itself.
Right. But those books could give a little bit of context for
that's right.
similar issues. Yeah, that's going right. on.
It's the same stuff. You see the same kinds of issues that are there. So okay. what we're assuming is this is a little bit after the events of Ezra and Nehemiah, same cultural milieu. Nothing has really changed. And really, in some ways, it's like they're kind of hunkering down, waiting mm-hmm. on the Messiah, and struggling to really be faithful.
Right.
They are, to some degree. They're not giving up, but, you know, they're not worshiping on the high places. They're not doing those. It's like they've learned their lesson from that. But it's not what they were hoping for and what they were expecting.
And you see that in the themes that come throughout the book. Jim, tell us a little bit about some of the themes and how they relate to Malachi's purpose.
You know, it's written, and Bill mentioned this when we were talking about it, that it's written as a conversation between God and his people. So God will make a statement or raise a question, and then he'll say, but you say this. Mm. And it's you almost get this sense like you're dealing with a household conflict or a fight with your spouse or one of your children. I mean, it's all you read it and you kind of come away going, man, they seem so immature and they don't really think of this as a relationship. You know, it's like being in a fight with your spouse and you're in a disagreement and your spouse rolls their eyes and you say, why do you despise me?
Right.
And your spouse says, how do I despise you? Mm-hmm. You're like, well, every time I make a statement, you roll your eyes at me. You obviously are despising me. Or, you know, you tell your child, hey, I need you to go clean your room and put everything away. And you walk in and everything's off the floor and they shoved it all under the bed. And you're like, no, I told you to put everything away. They're like, I did clean my room.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of conversational.
But you said clean my room. And so I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And God's just I mean, you can just see God's trying here, and they're being silly.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if you, like, the beginning of this conversation, so if you just, I'll just read a little bit of the text. This is the message that the Lord gave to Israel through the prophet Malachi. I have always loved you, says Yahweh. But you retort, really? How have you always loved us? And that just sets the tone for the whole thing. And it really is. It's like a petulant, kind of petty,
yes,
you know, self-justification and entitlement. It's amazing that it's in the Bible. It's because it's so honest.
And he chases a handful of things down. You know, it's not going to be a long series. Mm-mm. But he's really, when I look at it, I think there's about five main things that he goes after, that Malachi goes after. One is corrupt leadership. You know, he's got an issue with how the priests are running things. And it's interesting how he uses the word messenger in the book. I mean, his name could mean my messenger. He says the priests are supposed to be messengers
right.
for the Lord, but they're doing a bad job. And then we get to chapter 3, and he says, so I'm going to send my messenger, which we're pretty confident is a reference to John the Baptist who's going to prepare the way. And he says, then the messenger of the covenant is going to come to his temple suddenly. The one that you're desiring, he's going to show up, and it's not going to be fun.
Yeah.
because he's going to cleanse, he's going to purify, it's not going to be as joyful as you might be expecting.
Yeah, and just reminding folks, this is the last book of the Old Testament before that messenger, John the Baptist, right, comes on the scene. And so right, that's some really nice parallelism there.
Yeah, he's concerned about corrupt leadership. As Bill mentioned, their worship has become cold, routine. They're offering poor sacrifices. They just become religious, and they're doing the minimum.
Yeah,
it's lip service.
I wrote down minimum requirements versus true devotion to God.
And that's right.
I think that's something that resonates with everybody.
Yeah, he's concerned about divorce. You know, you're trading in your wife that you're supposed to be faithful to for the younger, newer model, and she is not godly, and it's introducing further corruption. Mm. He's concerned about some social justice issues around paying workers their wages and, a handful of other things. And this neglected giving, you know, they're not bringing the tithes,
right,
the tithes like they should. There's no sacrificial spirit left. So he's going to take all those down in a pretty direct way.
Awesome. Okay. So,
but it's not about, let's say this, I don't think the tone of the book is not about that you just need to go do these things.
Right. Right.
You know,
it reveals the heart. It reveals your lack of devotion. You're not really thinking of this like God thinks of this.
Right. Is that you don't bear my image. You don't really trust me. You don't really love me. And it's plaintive more than anything, it seems to me. It's God is appealing to them.
Because that seems to be part of the problem, is they're just going through the motions.
Right.
They're trying to obey at the minimum level without having a real heart connection. And so then the opposite of that is not to obey at the maximum level without having a heart connection.
Right.
The understanding is, what's the character of God? What's he done for you? How should I relate to him? And then, therefore, this is how I love and serve him.
Yeah.
So, Jim, as we think about entering this teaching series on Malachi, how should our members best engage the book?
Well, you know, it's relevant for us because we have all the same issues. And we have the same questions. I mean, have you ever been at a place in your life that you wondered if God really cared about you? Have you ever asked that question either aloud or just in your mind? God, do you really love me? Mm. I mean, that's one of the things that they're struggling with, because they had this perception of what they thought God was doing and how they thought things would go. They probably had a lack of awareness around the depth of their sin and the consequences that they're experiencing because of a long history of sin and rebellion and arrogance. And so when their expectations don't get met, then they immediately question God's love.
Right.
I mean, that's a very familiar feeling to most of us.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of lip service and doing the minimum requirement. I mean, you ever been at a place in your life where you feel like, well, I'm giving and I'm serving and I'm attending church and I'm doing all this, but there's just a lack of zeal. There's a lack of passion spiritually. You feel distant from God. And, I mean, have you ever thought to yourself, well, I'm doing all these things. Why don't I feel?
Yeah, why is my life not working out the way I thought?
Right. You know, have you ever had things happen in your life that just make you question, is God good? Is he sovereign? Does he see? Does he care? I mean, all of those ideas and those feelings are feelings that we struggle with. We're not any different from them in that sense. And the hope that you see in this book is God does care. He does raise those questions because he wants to get to the heart of the matter, right?
Yeah, and it seems like being able to withhold judgment on the folks that are the subject matter of the book, withhold judgment on Malachi, withhold judgment on God, and just sit in the tension. Mm-hmm. Like, we're real quick to try to take the tension out of things, right, Bill? I know you.
I think we do.
you like talking about
I
that.
I do. I mean, just to be able to put, that's why I think the historical context is so helpful for me, is these are real people who are trying to do the same thing that we're trying to do, mm-hmm, with less than we have. Mm-hmm. and how easy it is for us to judge one another from a distance. And that's why history is important for me, because it's a form of fellowship. Mm. I'm trying to humble myself and understand someone else's context. And so if I can do that and then find a way to put myself in this, then there's a hope for me to learn from these stories that have come to us. And for me to see that this is, I mean, we have a better image of all of this. I started to say, don't say better, but the writer to Hebrews says better. We got a better image of all of this,
right,
in Jesus. And we get to look back on all of that and see how plaintive, just how is God appealing to us. And I'm thinking about Jesus coming into Jerusalem and just being heartbroken, mm-hmm, over all of that, and how he longs to redeem and what he wants to be. And he's like, but you won't come to me.
Right.
You know, even as you're acclaiming me, you don't really fully understand what you're saying, just how alone, and just seeing God in that way, how patient he is with us, and seeing the fulfillment of that.
There has to be a purifying first.
Yeah.
In the relationship. And Malachi is going to talk about all of that. But if you're unwilling to be exposed and you're unwilling to be purified, then how can you have a relationship? Mm. And that's one of the images that Malachi is going to use of Jesus coming is he's going to be like soap that's going to bleach out clothes. Mm. You know, he's going to be like a blazing fire that purifies metal and burns away the dross. Mm. And that's how it has to happen, because we're unholy people and we're dealing with a holy God. And the amazing thing is God's willing to make us holy if we are willing, so that we can have a pure relationship and have joy and have all the blessings that he does want to grant us, right? But that's part of why the conversation happens the way that it does in the book, is because God's exposing them, and he's saying, like, look, you're saying these things, but that's not true.
Right.
Let's talk about what the truth is, and how do we move from this place of entitlement and, you know, to a place where we can have a real authentic relationship and receive blessings and be one, be united.
Good stuff. Sounds like it's going to be a very interesting, different book for a lot of folks, maybe first exposure. We really want to encourage people to take advantage of the reading plan. There'll be a link in the show notes. Jim, you put those verses together for us weekly. Yes. I know you put a lot of thought, time, prayer into that. So we ask people to engage with that. Read the book. I think, Bill, you've mentioned this from the stage. Just read it through and then read it again. You can read through the whole book in, what, 15 minutes?
It's just a few minutes. And one of the beautiful things about these small prophetic books of the Old Testament is you have these images that become like a thorn that sticks in your brain. And that once that image is lodged, that's what good preaching does to you. You get that in your head and it won't go away. Mm. And so that what you're reading is good preaching. This is a sermon that was Spirit-led and inspired, and it has endured for 2,500 years now.
Yeah.
And people have found it relevant. And like, if I could, I want to give one image that has stuck with me. It's been one of the defining images of my life. Is at the beginning of chapter 4, Malachi speaks about the great and terrible day of the Lord. And I mean, I probably think about this every day. And he says, I'll just read it. He says, "The Lord of Heaven's army says, the day of judgment is coming, burning like a furnace. On that day, the arrogant and the wicked will be burned up like straw. They'll be consumed, roots and branches and all." And so the idea is, if you oppose God, so let's go back to James and how this is like James. This guy's opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And so he's saying there's not going to be a remnant of arrogance left behind. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, what would it be like to live in a world where that there's no remnant of arrogance at all? Nothing hidden, nothing underground. Root, branch, everything. It's all gone. All the fruit's gone. There's no more arrogance. It's completely gone. And he says, that's what happens to arrogance. But for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in his wings. So he's talking about one event that has the opposite effect depending on the posture that you have. Now, that's a powerful image. And this is not an Israel plug, but it's, I was in Israel, and I got to watch the sun come up over Moab.
Mm-hmm.
And when the disc first begins to break over the hills of Moab, and you're looking east, you see the wings of the dawn. So it's like the sun has, it's like a flattened out disc with these wings that run. And that's the image that it's talking about there. And so I think about that is that the posture that I take, and it's been life-changing for me. I mean, I'm so thankful for Malachi and just that one image that there is going to be a day that, depending on my posture, is going to either consume me or it's going to be the Son of Righteousness rising with healing. It's going to solve all my problems. Mm. And I don't have to be right about everything. I just have to be humble and receive and greet that day and long for that day.
That's right.
Now, that's the kind of thing that I would argue, like, that can change your life. You can get a lot. I have gotten a lot out of that in terms of how I think about greeting the day, and that one day, that this day is just one more day closer to that day, and that day is coming with certainty. And how do I receive that? And then imagine living in a world where all of the fruit of wickedness and arrogance is gone. I mean, it brings real hope to you. And so I think that's the kind of thing. But if you read that over and over again, those images that you talked about, you know, scrubbing, Jesus being like soap that scrubs, just that idea, there's so much hope that's in that.
Yeah.
And there's trembling as well.
Right.
You know? But we need both of those things.
Right.
And that's an antidote for who we are as a people.
It's good. It's a good word. Jim, any other thoughts as we close?
No, I'm excited. I'm grateful.
Fantastic. Well, on behalf of our church, I really appreciate the work the teaching team does, time, energy, prayer, conversations around the table to keep us biblically oriented. It's essential to who we are as a church, growing our own devotion to God, our own devotion to others. And so let's engage church, let's engage this book well, and we'll see you again on the next episode.